content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our 2024 August edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. Now, the Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program about that as well. Now, this month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of July at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. We begin the program this month with a look at a book entitled Hillbilly Elegy. It's a memoir of a family and culture in crisis by J.D. Vance. Hillbilly Elegy is a passionate and personal analysis of a culture in crisis, that of white working-class Americans. The disintegration of this group, a process that has been slowly occurring now for more than 40 years, has been reported with growing frequency and alarm, but has never before been written about as searingly from the inside. J.D. Vance tells the story, the true story, of what a social, regional, and class decline feels like when you were born with it hung around your neck. The Vance family story begins, hopefully, in post-war America. J.D.'s parents, grandparents, rather, were dirt poor and in love and moved north from Kentucky's Appalachia region to Ohio in the hopes of escaping the dreadful poverty around them. They raised a middle-class family, and eventually one of their grandchildren would graduate from Yale Law School, a conventional marker of success in achieving generational upward mobility. But as the family saga of Hillbilly Elegy plays out, we learn that J.D.'s grandparents, aunt, uncle, sister, and most of all his mother, struggled profoundly with the demands of their new middle-class life, never fully escaping the legacy of abuse, alcoholism, poverty, and trauma so characteristic of their part of America. With piercing honesty, Vance shows how he himself still carries around the demons of his chaotic family history. A deeply moving memoir with its share of humor and vividly colorful figures, Hillbilly Elegy is the story of how upward mobility really feels. And it is an urgent and troubling meditation on the loss of the American dream for a large segment of this country. And as a footnote to this article, I'd like to add that J.D. Vance is the Republican nominee for vice president in this year's presidential elections. Now let's turn to a book called Think Twice by Harlan Coben, and this is actually a review that was done by Ray Palin in May of this year, 2024. Here's the story. Fans of the great Harlan Coben, who have been with him since the beginning, proudly recall the Myron Bolitar novels, which dominated his earlier work. Now, those who have never read these books should catch the amazing Prime Video series Shelter, which features a young Myron. With the long-awaited release of Think Twice, we are right back in Myron's world as it exists in 2024. As a sports agent, he finds himself caught up in a murder case that quickly becomes very personal. Just 3 years earlier, Myron was giving a eulogy at the funeral of his client, NBA coach Greg Downing. Myron never had an easy relationship with Greg in the decades they knew each other, but they were able to get past their differences and work together. Myron's world is rocked when FBI agent Monica Hawes enters his Midtown Manhattan office and asks him and his colleague, best friend Wynn Lockwood, where Greg is. After the initial shock of such a question wears off, Myron informs Hawes that it must be some sort of joke, as everyone knows that Greg is dead. Hawes indicates that this is what the FBI had been led to believe until his prints were the only outside evidence found at the location of a double homicide. Readers will realize at this point what the cryptic prologue meant, as it depicted someone planting DNA evidence at the site of the two slayings to implicate a third party. Now, the FBI does not know whether or not to believe Myron, so they keep a close eye on him. In the meantime, Myron and Wynn begin their own investigation that consists of a whirlwind tour around the country to look into these recent crimes and see if there is any possible way that Greg is still alive today. More likely, though, they want to find out who is setting him up so they can present that information to the FBI, restore his good name, and move on. Of course, knowing that this is a Harlan Coben novel should be indicative of the fact that nothing will fit easily or make sense at first, and the wild ride that ensues will be one worth taking. It is tough to go into any detail about spoiling some of the great plot twists and elements that will astound you. Myron and Wynn will have their heads spinning with what they uncover and the misdirection that leads them down several wrong and deadly paths. The most humanizing aspect of the story is Myron reconnecting with his old school flame, Emily, who is also Greg's ex-wife. Myron is actually the biological father of her oldest son, Jeremy, thanks to a pre-wedding night fling that they had with each other. This has always bothered Myron's loyal wife, Teresa, so she's not happy at all that this is being dredged up again. Think Twice is about family, friendship, loyalty, secrets, lies, and most of all, the chance for redemption. It's also a sleekly written murder mystery that will have you guessing right up until the end and put you firmly in the shoes of our very plausible and likable protagonist. This is from a review by Ray Palin on May 17th of 2024, just this year. And again, the name of the book is Think Twice, and it was by the popular author Harlan Coben. Now, speaking of popular authors, let's take a look at a new book by the very famous and popular James Patterson, this one written alongside Maxine Petro, and the name of this book is The 24th Hour. And this is also a review that was done by Ray Palin as well. As I was reading The 24th Hour, I had the strangest feeling that I was holding two books in my hand. In today's tough economy, two books for the price of one is a pretty good deal. Then I surmised that James Patterson and Maxine Petro must have spun their own separate stories and merged them in this highly unique mashup. The 24th Hour is indeed the 24th entry in the Women's Murder Club series. For the uninitiated, the Women's Murder Club is comprised of SFPD Sergeant Lindsay Boxer, Medical Examiner Claire Washburn, Assistant District Attorney Yuki Castellano, and crime writer Cindy Thomas. And this is, of course, in the San Francisco Police Department, I should point out. Now, each of these powerful women deals with murder and other crimes on an almost daily basis. So any opportunity for them to get together and share notes on a current case is sure to be explosive and fodder for Cindy's next story. Lindsay, Claire, Yuki, and Cindy are at a restaurant celebrating Cindy's engagement to one of Lindsay's pals, longtime friend and partner Rich Conklin. However, their fun get-together is cut short when they hear screams coming from the second floor, and they find a mostly disrobed woman on the ground, obviously the victim of an assault. She utters the troubling words, "He raped us." This leads to a search of the entire place and ends with the discovery of a man with no pants stuffed behind a locker trying to hide. He is Tyler Cates, an employee of the restaurant, who claims that the young lady requested that he engage in rough sex with her in the changing room. The victim's legal name is Mary Elena Hayes, but during her initial interview with the Women's Murder Club, she jumps between names like Loretta and Lily. Mary Elena suffers from and is being treated for dissociative identity disorder, DID, which explains why she referred to herself as us. Her many alters will only appear when she requires protection, which is what happens here. Yuki and her second chair, Nick Gaines, plan to defend Mary Elena in court. They are filled with much trepidation, as most judges and juries do not believe in or support multiple personality disorder as a defense. To take it a step further, Prosecutor Ed Schneider is described by Yuki as a pit bull and is not one to give clinical or scientific value to DID should it come up. If any of Mary Elena's alters emerge during this testimony, he will laugh and tear Yuki's case to shreds. To make matters even trickier, there are no medications to handle DID, which also will not help the defense. Cates is not a credible individual by any stretch of the imagination, but Yuki and her legal team are walking a slippery slope. Under normal circumstances, it would be a slam dunk for them. Despite these challenges, things are going well, and the Women's Murder Club is doing their fair share to assist. Thankfully, no issues with unexpected alters have derailed the proceedings just yet. But then, out of the blue, while Mary Elena is testifying, Cates jumps up and begins shouting. His outburst includes accusations that, if true, could blow up the entire case for all involved. As all of this drama is unfolding, Lindsay is investigating the high-profile murder of a billionaire couple. However, while fascinating in its own right, I found myself much more captivated by the DID storyline than I was with this one. I have always been intrigued by fiction revolving around multiple personalities. It provides a great point plot in thrillers and legal-themed novels, and probably was best used in William Deal's 1993 book, Primal Fear. The 24th Hour is another quick and relentless read from the dynamic duo of Patterson and Petro. It is quite unpredictable, and it was a pleasure getting reacquainted with Lindsay, Claire, Yuki, and Cindy. That was a review by Ray Palin, written in May of this year, 2024. And again, the name of the book is The 24th Hour, and it's by James Patterson and Maxine Petro. Now let's take a look at a book by Freda McFadden. This one is called The Housemaid's Secret. Here's the plot. "Welcome to the family," Nina Winchester says as I shake her elegant manicured hand. I smile politely, gazing around the marble hallway. Working here is my last chance to start fresh. I can pretend to be whoever I like, but I'll soon learn that the Winchester secrets are far more dangerous than my own. Every day I clean the Winchesters' beautiful house, top to bottom. I collect their daughter from school, and I cook a delicious meal for the whole family before heading up to eat alone in my tiny room on the top floor. I try to ignore how Nina makes a mess just to watch me clean it up. How she tells strange lies about her daughter, and how her husband, Andrew, seems more broken every day. But as I look into Andrew's handsome brown eyes, so full of pain, it's hard not to imagine what it would be like to live Nina's life. The walk-in closet, the fancy car, the perfect husband. I only try on one of Nina's pristine white dresses once, just to see what it's like. But she soon finds out, and by the time I realize my attic bedroom door only locks from the outside, it's far too late. But I reassure myself the Winchesters don't know who I really am. They don't know what I'm capable of. An unbelievably twisty read that will have you glued to the pages late into the night. Anyone who loves The Woman in the Window, The Wife Between Us, and The Girl on the Train won't be able to put this one down. This is called The Housemaid's Secret, and it's by Freda McFadden. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a monthly presentation from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. Now let's move on to another review. This one was done by Pamela Kramer in May of this year, and it's called Mind Games by Nora Roberts. Part thriller, part love story, and part ode to rural Kentucky. Mind Games is New York Times bestselling author Nora Roberts' latest addition to her huge library of work, over 200 books and counting. Often Roberts dabbles in the paranormal in her novels. In this one, the main character can read the minds of others. This ability has been passed on to the women in her family for generations, and her gift is strong. In fact, as a 12-year-old, Thea Fox saw the murder of her parents by a psychopath named Ray Riggs. Her grandmother saw it at the same time, although not with the detail that Thea experienced. Because of the specifics that Thea gave law enforcement, the perpetrator was caught, and she was able to provide additional information she gleaned from his mind regarding other murders that he had committed. Although the two officers on the case were skeptical at first, they soon realized that while they had a hard time believing in Thea's abilities, they had to admit it was a real thing. Now orphaned, Thea and her brother Rem live with their Grammy, and they thrive in the small Kentucky town where their mother's family had lived for generations. Grammy is a superb cook, makes candles, has farm animals, gardens, and is the local healer with her herbs and salves. Thea and Rem each grow up to be successful in their chosen field. Both decide to live in Redbud Hollow, Kentucky, named for the beautiful eastern redbud tree that blooms with beautiful purple flowers every spring. Now, the first half of the novel is about Thea growing up and dealing with the terrible connection she has with Riggs. It's a link that was strengthened the night of her parents' murder, when she entered his mind to see his identity and follow his steps. With Grammy's help, she learns to keep him out of her head most of the time. The book's second half is about Thea's adult life and the attraction she feels for her new neighbor, Ty. There is some backstory here, and Roberts creates a humorous tie between the two. As one knows to expect from Roberts' thrillers, there must be a climax in which Thea will face Riggs before she can find her happily ever after. Without giving away any spoilers, I will merely say that this novel presents a most unusual climactic battle between good and evil, one that is cleverly executed and quite effective. Mind Games weighs in at over 400 pages, many of them a paean to rural life in the Appalachian Mountains of Kentucky. The food, the handicrafts, the history, the culture, and the community are all discussed and described to add color to the characters and the story. Could there have been some editing that might have made the book a bit more impactful? I believe so, but it's Nora Roberts and her folksy manner of narrative makes it all eminently readable and quite enjoyable. It is sure to become one of this summer's standout beach reads. Once again, the book is called Mind Games, and it's by the popular author Nora Roberts, and that was a review by Pamela Kramer that was done in May of 2024. Now let's turn to another review by Ray Palin. He was a busy man this year with a lot of reviews for popular books at the North Carolina Library Accessible Books and Services. This is a book by David Baldacci, very popular author. It's called A Calamity of Souls. Whenever I review a new title from David Baldacci, I always marvel at how this prolific writer remains fresh and interesting with each release. That being said, his latest novel, A Calamity of Souls, is completely different. It took him 10 years to complete, and it may be not only one of his finest books to date, but quite possibly his most important. Two sheriff's deputies from Freeman County, Virginia, open this story with the apprehension and brutal beating of a black man who has been arrested as the only possible suspect in the murder of his elderly white employers. The accused is Jerome Washington, and the victims are the extremely wealthy Leslie and Ann Randolph. Defense attorney John Robert Lee, who goes by Jack, has been making a name for himself, but is about to become aligned with a case that seems impossible to win or receive any justice for. While visiting his parents, he receives a message that Miss Jessup had called there for him and needed to speak with him. She has been known to the family for decades and is a well-respected maid to one of their neighbors. Jack and his father take a ride to the black part of town to meet with Miss Jessup. She proceeds to tell Jack that her son-in-law, Jerome, was wrongfully arrested for the Randolphs' murder. Employed by them as a handyman, he found their bloodied, lifeless bodies in their bedroom as deputies arrived. The law wants to railroad Jerome for this gruesome double homicide and is already threatening the death penalty. Jack meets with Jerome and is shocked by how badly beaten and injured he is. The assigned defense attorney did nothing to help Jerome and merely moved along with the prosecution's case. Jack believes Jerome, a decorated Vietnam veteran, and agrees to defend him. Keep in mind that the book's setting is the late 1960s, shortly after the assassinations of MLK and RFK, when there is little to no chance for a black man in these circumstances to escape the death penalty in the South. As Jack begins to look into the matter, he receives almost a complete wall of resistance and hatred. When the prosecution brings in a heavy hitter from out of town, he realizes the magnitude and importance of this case, and the likelihood of an all-white jury does not make this uphill task any easier. Assisting Jack is Desiree DuBose, a black lawyer who specifically works on racially charged cases such as this one. She is well-educated, well-spoken, and unlike anything the courthouse in Freeman County has ever seen. Not only does this unwinnable case weigh on Jack, his team is faced with dirty surprise upon dirty surprise. David Baldacci has done such an outstanding job plotting this lengthy tale that there is not much I can say about this intense case without giving away something juicy. There are so many twists in this unpredictable thriller, with some serious instances of human depravity sprinkled in for good measure, that it reads like a literary classic. A Calamity of Souls is indeed an important novel, one that Baldacci was born to write, and a story to which only he could do justice. And that's a review by Ray Palin from April of this year, 2024. And once again, the name of the book is Calamity of Souls by David Baldacci. Now let's talk about another book on this program from an author we talked about earlier, Freda McFadden. This is a book called The Locked Door, and this is from the New York Times best-selling author Freda McFadden. It's a riveting psychological thriller about guilt, secrets, and whether it's possible to outrun what's in our blood. Some doors are locked for a reason. Here's the plot. While 11-year-old Nora Davis was up in her bedroom doing homework, she had no idea her father was killing women in the basement until the day the police arrived at their front door. Decades later, Nora's father is spending his life behind bars, and Nora is a successful surgeon with a quiet, solitary existence. Nobody knows about her past, and she'll do anything at all to keep it that way. Then, one of her young female patients is murdered, killed in the same unique and horrific manner that her father used to kill his victims. Somebody knows who Nora is. Somebody wants her to take the fall for this unthinkable crime. But she's not like her father. The police can't pin anything on her as long as they don't look in her basement. Once again, this book is called The Locked Door, and it's by Freda McFadden. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program today. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google or search for Accessible Books North Carolina Library. Or you can call toll-free 888-388-2460. Once again, that's 888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thanks again for joining me, and so long until next month.